Good afternoon, everybody. It is Thursday afternoon, and it is now time for Inside the Eye Live Prime Time.
I fetch.
Quiet. Go ahead. She's asking a question. Don't be rude.
Hey, Fetch, did that woman really say you have garnets of steel and a mind like a freaking laser?
Mary, you can't be asking questions like that. This is Inside the Eye Live Prime Time.
Why not? Aren't we broadcasting from the Middle East?
Well, yeah, but we might be seen as being politically incorrect.
You know, the problem is everybody dumps people when there's a sign of political incorrectness.
Fetchan, you're always politically correct.
Heck, thanks. Does that mean we can talk about dumping the Israelis tomorrow?
Oh, I'm sure you will probably say quite a bit more than that. And now coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, this is Inside the Eye Live Prime Time with your host, The Fetch.
All right, everybody. Thank you very much for that, Mary, from Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia. This is The Fetch, and you are listening to Inside the Eye Live Prime Time. Today's date is January the 31st, 2019, and a good Thursday afternoon to early evening to all of you listening in the United States and Canada, and a good late evening to early Friday morning to all of you listening in European and Asian time zones, and of course, wherever you are listening out there on the World Wide Web or our FM and micro FM broadcasting outlets, may all be well with you and yours. Now, the weather here in Riyadh, relative to most of you in the northern climes, is downright envious, with daytime highs hitting 85 degrees today under clear, sunny skies. I almost kind of laugh have to say that after knowing what you guys are going through. The evening has been downright spectacularly comfortable, by the way, without even a chill in the air. And we are currently sitting at 66 degrees at shortly after 2 o'clock in the morning. And the overnight low should remain in the 60s, coming in at a very pleasant 62 degrees. Winds are a very moderate 6 miles per hour coming out of the south southeast. Now, I'm not sure, maybe some of you are already throwing your shoes or your phones or something at the computer now or at the screen or something as I kind of like checked off all this fantastic Riyadh weather we're having, because needless to say, the extreme weather hitting much of the United States is a topic of discussion, even here in Saudi Arabia, at least among the American expat community. People who are from the Chicago area, Ohio, Michigan, all of this type of part of, you know, Philadelphia, they're all quite happy, quite frankly, to be in Riyadh at the moment, as temperatures across the Midwest, as you all know, have plunged to near death-defying lows, as what they now call a polar vortex has swept into the heartland of America and then spread throughout much of the East. Now, in at least 10 states, the U.S. Postal Service has said delivery service faces disruption, which is a rare occurrence for a government agency that boasts of never letting weather get in the way of a mail person in their route. See, they brought up that. I'm going to bring that up a little later also. Now, due to the extreme weather conditions caused by what's called Winter Storm Jaden, we have temporarily suspended delivery service in certain locations to ensure the safety and well-being of our employees, the agency tweeted. Visit our service alerts page for more details. Now, some of the amazing figures out there, because not everybody's in America, guys, and not everybody maybe have heard all of this, but North Dakota, which is famous, a lot of us who are from California, a lot of us are descended really from a generation of Americans that moved out from the Midwest to California in the 1950s. So they moved out to California. They started families. That became the California that everybody fell in love with the beaches and the Beach Boys and all of that kind of fun stuff. And, of course, we were the generation and the one before us that really, really solidified the aerospace industry inside of America, quite frankly. We had one of the most robust aerospace industries in California at the time. So that's kind of how it worked. You know, we were all, a lot of our families came from the Midwest. So we heard a lot of the stories about how bad it was. But hey, I tell you, it's bad. North Carolina, as low as minus 32 degrees C, that's 25 degrees Fahrenheit, with wind chills at minus 52 degrees, which is that's Celsius, folks, minus 52 Celsius, which is minus 62 degrees Fahrenheit in Minnesota. Now, the chill is expected to reach a wide swath of the United States. It's priority there, with cities from Fargo, North Dakota, to Minneapolis and Chicago. Temperatures have already dipped below minus 26 degrees Celsius, which is minus 15 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, AccuWeather says there will be temperature drops below 0 degrees Celsius, which is single digits Fahrenheit, in cities and areas around Kansas City, Missouri, St. Louis, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh. All-time record lows are expected in northern Indiana with minus 46 degrees Celsius, which is minus 50 degrees in that area, Fahrenheit. Now, on Thursday morning today, 11 states, North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, Vermont, and New Hampshire, across the Midwest, and of course, northern New England, recorded temperatures that are lower than the northernmost point in Alaska and the North Pole. Now, in Winnipeg and Manitoba, the temperature dropped so low it neared the surface level temperature of Mars, making these Canadian cities likely contenders for the coldest places on Earth. Now, the coldest spot in Canada yesterday was Key Lake, Saskatchewan, with air temperatures reading minus 47.2 degrees Celsius, which is roughly minus 52.6 degrees Fahrenheit. In International Falls, Minnesota, temperatures fell as low as minus 45 degrees Celsius, which is minus 49 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, I don't know if many of you travel out there, but I travel a lot on the airplane, and when you get up into the 30,000 foot range, 32, 33,000 foot range, these are the temperatures you're going to see at 30,000 feet. So you have to wonder, just is this a polar vortex, or has the jet stream basically just kind of collapsed and come down to Earth, literally down to the surface level of the Earth, because these are the same temperatures. If you're riding in a plane and you've got that monitor, what's the temperature outside? You'll see minus 52. I've seen as low as minus 70 before outside, which is like, my goodness. Thank goodness those airplanes work, you know. But yeah, it's been cold, obviously, outside. If you were to go out, you'd almost like freeze to death instantly, but that is darn cold. Now, in Des Moines, Iowa, the National Weather Service warned this is the coldest air many of us will have ever experienced, and suggested then that anyone who goes outside should avoid taking deep breaths and minimize talking. Guys, listen up. In Des Moines, Iowa, the National Weather Service is warning to avoid taking deep breaths and minimize talking. And I was thinking to myself, maybe, just maybe, that's where I should take some of the girls out for a walk. I'm just thinking, because, you know, minimize the talking, right? I'm like, oh, come on, girls, let's go for a walk. Come on, let's go. Just kidding, gals. Just kidding. But yeah, that's, you know, can't even talk, man. It's so cold. In Chicago, blustery weather could mean wind chill breaks the current record low of minus 33 degrees Celsius. Man, it's so cold. Some places, I'm looking at these numbers, it's amazing. Chicago O'Hare yesterday canceled 2,000 flights. That's pretty impressive. All of this wintry weather in the United States, though, reminds me of stories from our parents, as you can imagine. They would often talk about minus 40 degrees because they were like from Hibbing, Minnesota, and Fargo, North Dakota, or South Dakota, whatever, which was. And they would always tell us stories. It was so cold. It was minus 40 degrees in a blizzard. And of course, they would remind us that that was no excuse not to go to school. Okay. It was absolutely no excuse not to go to school. It didn't matter whether it was minus 40 degrees. You still went to school. You did not use the weather as an excuse to get out of your work. And that was kind of like the old American adage, you know, we never let weather get in the way. And that's kind of like, of course, the old postal service equally, but my, how times have changed. Now, you know, it hasn't actually been much better for our friends in the UK. where this entire week they have seen actually sub-zero weather and snow throughout Ireland, the UK, Cornwall. I thought I'd sneak that one in. And Scotland. Now, Scotland, for the most part, has been largely cut off from the rest of England. And travelers have been advised about traveling to or from Scotland due to heavy snow, which has snarled traffic really throughout the entire British Isles. Now, households across the UK, again, today are bracing for more disruptions as forecasters are warning that some rural communities could get cut off by another round of heavy snow there. Forecasters said that up to 10 centimeters of snow may settle in some areas and warned that icy conditions could cause problems for drivers and rail passengers. Now, interesting enough, since we're on the winter wonderland stories, the biggest, most difficult, the record-setting winter of the UK was actually 1963. It was one of the coldest on record, and it was the coldest since 1740. Now, their temperatures consistently reached lower than minus 20 degrees Celsius with blizzards, snowdrifts, and even the sea freezing along the coastline. The severe cold began just before Christmas in 1962, and it just sat there to the north of the UK with really for pretty much the entire winter, and it dragged basically cold polar winds over the UK. This was a high pressure zone that was pulling everything off of the North Pole and bringing it down. On the 29th and 30th of December, a blizzard struck the UK with snowdrifts up to 6 meters. That's 18 feet, everybody. Snow continued to fall frequently and until early March 1963, much of the UK remained covered in snow. So never fear. The peddlers of global warming have assured us that all of this cold weather is absolute proof that the globe is getting warmer, which, frankly, you will get no argument from our friends down under, which have really been suffering under some very, very hot weather, plus 40 degree type weather throughout much of the areas of Australia. Now, talking about Australia, we're going to have, man, I hate when my brain goes dead, but it's that time of night. We are going to have Max Egan. that's who we're going to have. We're going to have Max Egan. He's in Australia, Brisbane, Australia, and he's going to actually come on for hour number two. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Middle East and Israel and Palestine and whatever else Max wants to talk about. But he's going to join us in hour number two. And then speaking also about Down Under, because we do have an audience Down Under, and we got a really nice email this week coming from a gentleman by the name of Just Rob. That's it. His name, Just Rob. And he says here, I'll read it here because it's so nice. Thought you might be interested in a few articles from Down Under. He said, you can proudly and openly be an LGBTQ Black Lives Matter, but to openly say it is okay to be white, heck no. And then he says here, he came across an article. He said, Margaret Court. Now, if you remember Margaret Court was very famous. She won 23 Grand Slam tennis singles titles at a time. As he writes here, I'm writing. He writes so good. I just let him write my script. Heck with it, man. Rob, if you're listening, just send your next script, man. He says here, I'm going to read it. Then I came across the next article. Margaret Court, who has won 23 Grand Slam tennis singles at a time when they spent weeks on ships getting to events. She has since become a Pentecostal Christian minister and has openly spoken out against gay marriage. She has been persecuted from pillar to post for her stance. Now at this year's Australia Open, forget about the star tennis players. All focus has been on Anna Wintour in the stands. They gave her a platform, and she wants the Margaret Court Arena renamed due to her quote-unquote, he didn't write quote-unquote, I'm saying that, due to her intolerance. Upon further investigation, it appears another case of them in echo chambers here, telling other people in their own lands how to live and to forget about their proud heritage and history in favor of debauchery and decadence. Sickening. And he sent on, he says, love your show and hope to be a donor this year. That would be great. I'd like to see you sponsor equally, Rob. But it says here, Fox Sports.com, Australia Tennis, Australian Open, on and on. It says here, exactly, Anna Wintour. I did open up the article, and I have some comments on this. Anna Wintour may best be known as Vogue America's editor-in-chief. So basically, Anna Wintour, I'm not sure if she is Jewish. We would have to look that up quickly enough. I have not looked it up. But it definitely is an intolerant, racist, leftist, anti-American Bolshevik rag. And they are preaching essentially intolerance of everybody but themselves. It says here, she's supposed to be a fashion icon, and she's also supposedly a massive tennis fan. And she was spotted courtside almost every day at this year's Australia Open. Wintour was invited to give the keynote address for the Australia Open Inspirational Series. And she couldn't and didn't hold back when addressing whether or not Margaret Court Arena should be renamed. And quoting here, Margaret Court was a champion on the court, but a meeting point for players of all nations, preferences, and backgrounds should celebrate somebody that was a champion off it as well, Wintour said. And then she goes on to say this: it is inconsistent for the sport for Margaret Court's name to be on the stadium that does so much to bring all people together. And then it goes on, and then get this. This much, I think, is clear to anyone who understands the spirit and joy of the game. Intolerance has no place in tennis. I'm sick and tired, quite frankly, of Jews throwing the verbiage intolerance in our faces. A most intolerant, racist, bigoted culture like the Jewish community, constantly having intolerance for our icons, for our way of life, for our preferences. Look, if we don't like the gay lifestyle and we want to vocalize it, you be tolerant of us and just shut your face. That's how I'm beginning to now take this attitude. Look, if you don't want to talk, if you don't have tolerance for our attitude, get out of our face. Everything that you say is basically to try to shut us down. And I don't, for one, feel we should ever be shut down by these people anymore. This woman goes on to say, clear to anyone. No, it's not clear to anyone. She says, who understands the spirit and the joy of the game, intolerance has no place in tennis. Intolerance has a place every single place that we want it to exist, because we are sick and tired of Jewish intolerance of our way of life. That's really what's going on here. You have a bunch of intolerant, racist, supremacist Jewish people wanting to impose their decadent, debauched life, or actually it's death culture or death cult on the rest of us. They don't have any tolerance for you, so don't listen to their tolerance. I was sitting there, I swear, 1998, and I was listening to something on the radio, and it was like 3 a.m, man. It was like early. And this guy's talking, and it was like a lecture, and I don't even know where I heard it, quite frankly. I honestly don't recall where I heard it, or maybe it was in the early 2000s on the internet. But this guy was going and said, look, we are, and this is 1998, turn of the century, 1998, 2002, he said, we are in danger today of falling prey by those who push tolerance. No, he didn't say it that way. I got to paraphrase it. But somehow he's talking, how did he say that? Let me get this straight here. Something to the effect that we are becoming too tolerant of other people's intolerance for us, and this will be our downfall. We have become too tolerant of other people's intolerance for us. Look, if you have an anti-gay lifestyle mentality and you want to push a Christian or a non-debauchery lifestyle, you should have that right. And there's not a single gay person who should open his mouth. Don't preach to us about tolerance while you're intolerating that person's views over there. That person has a right to their views just as much as everybody else. And no Jew should ever be allowed again to get up there and try to take away your monuments. If you want that, you fire back. We need to change every single synagogue name out there, because there's absolutely no place for tolerance in our society. Absolutely none. Every synagogue should change their name to "This is the Star of David Church" and leave it. And even that's racist. See, there's no end to the stupidity of this logic, guys. That's the point I'm trying to make here. We can say any stupid, idiotic thing, and we can sound perfect in a Jewish world. How intelligent is that? Is that the type of life we want to go to, and on and have to deal with this crap from these people? Everybody should have booed that person. I swear, everyone should get out there and boo. and make her know and make her get off the stage. And she should be heckled and hounded everywhere she goes for her intolerance. This is how you have to start treating these people. I'm not saying you get violent, but she just got in our faces in front of 20, 30, 40, 50,000. It's amplified using Fox News. And she basically said, I don't like your way of life. You shut up. You shut up. You shut up. You shut up. Okay, fine. She just told you to shut up because of your beliefs. But they do it in a backhand slapped way. Oh, there's no room for tolerance. Okay, fine. There's no room for tolerance. Get out of our place. You're not tolerant of us. Get out of here. And start having this mentality. This idea of there's no tolerance. Give us a break, dude. Whatever, everywhere I find these preachers of intolerance, what do we find? We find people basically saying everybody has to be excluded except us, in which case we must be the superior source here. It's insane. We have become way too tolerant of other people's intolerance of our views. And since we still are the majority, we should say that our majority views should absolutely be respected. And if we don't want to see a bunch of idiotic moron, gay moron, I got to be polite here. It's family hour. But if we don't want to see them parading down the street because it's violating our sensibilities, then you get the frick off our streets because you must be tolerant of us equally. This isn't a one-way street where we tolerate you and you can do whatever you want. And then at the same time, you're telling us we can't do anything. Because, oh, you're going to be, no. You must take the high road here and start to band together and shout it down. And if the media wants, who cares? Why are you worried about what a bunch of Jewish idiots out there are saying in their own press beacons? And you say, oh, that's just not the Jews. Yes, it is. Give me a freaking break. It says here, Anna Wintour becomes the latest to call. Oh, really? I didn't even hear about this. But the latest to call for Margaret Court Arena's name to be changed at OSS, calling it inconsistent with values of tennis. Tweeted, Ben Rothenberg. Don't tell me it's not Jews pushing this agenda, folks. It's always Jews pushing this agenda. And that's the main contention here, because it's always Jews and nobody wants to talk about the people behind the destruction of our country. And it's not just our country, folks. It's our entire Western civilization that these people are assaulting. They are guests in our lands. Literally, they have become guests, but they act as if they somehow are the gods over everybody. And what do? They preach death. They preach debauchery. They preach idiocy. Heck, you can't even get kids that can even do math anymore. All this Jewish genius out there, they can't even do simple math stuff anymore. I got one for you. 2x equals 360 divided by 4. What's x equal? I bet you most of these kids out there are going like, oh, I can't get that one. And folks, if you can't get it, boy, you got to get back to school and at least get some of the basics down. It's 45, folks. Anyways, guys, I look at these stories seriously, and it just galls me because it's a never-ending fusillade of absolute idiocy from the Jewish community. I can't think of it as any other way. These guys just don't shut up. They just go on and on. Every single Holocaust museum out there should be torn down because it's an affront and offensive to our way of life. We should not be supporting that. What did you have to do personally? You personally, all of you listening out there, what did you have to do with this quote unquote Holocaust? Yet they want you to pay them money every time you turn around. Give me. Do you realize there's more Holocaust survivors now than there was when they first started this whole thing? They don't seem to die. They just keep growing and growing and growing. It's just a nonstop racket of stealing, theft from our national treasuries to feed their idiotic worldview. You know, I saw a story last week, because last week was International Holocaust Day, or maybe it was earlier this week. Do you realize that if you go through all of the statements, the public statements that were made during the International Holocaust celebration, if you want to call it that, this week, there was not one thank you from one Jewish speaker. These people are the most ingrate, ungrateful, dishonest, unethical people. There was not one thank you, folks. Not one thank you from these people. And yet people out there want to worship this, and they didn't even say thanks once. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, prime time. Back with more right after this. All right, everybody. Welcome back. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware, right here again on Revolution Radio at Revolution .radio. That's Revolution Radio at Revolution.radio. And welcome back. And I'm just trying to read here something real quick. Okay. We're trying to get Max Egan lined up here. He's basically in another window right now, and we're trying to get everything lined up. I can do 30 minutes, an hour would be good. We can do it, you know. Let me just hold on here. We're just telling Max he's actually scheduled for an hour, but anything. Okay, now I'll just let him work that out. We'll try to get this scheduled on the next break here. But he's at least standing by. Max Egan, everybody. Again, he's a activist, quite vocal activist, too, for the Palestinian issues. He's out in Brisbane on. And that would be a yes. Thank you very much. Okay, so I think he's lined up. All right, very good. Anyways, it's listener sponsored and supported radio. Again, we talk a lot about this every week. You know, we've had a good, a pretty good month so far for January. Of course, January's over, right? So we don't have too much more to go. But we've had a great January, everybody. We're probably going to have, since we've relaunched the new website, we're probably going to have the best month we've ever had since the relaunch. Now, we're still having problems with archive.org. You know, they've been kind of throttling back the numbers. If we do different channels, we get different numbers. But we think everything is still the same on the downloads. We're still reaching very, very good numbers in the aftermarket archives. Now, what we've done is if you're on an Android device and you want to catch the show on your Android device, you can now get it on Play Store. What you're going to do, you go to the Google Play Store and you're going to take, you're going to take castbox.fm, and the links are on my website. So you can go to castbox.fm and then just do a search for Inside the Eye Live and Inside the Eye Live Primetime. They're two different channels, so I created two different shows. And what we just started last week, what I've learned now is that we used to have our Kiwi account, which we closed down because we couldn't upload any more files. Kiwi was actually using this CastBox service. I found out this past two nights that they were actually using CastBox to warehouse all of the interviews up until this past August. So if you're looking for those interviews, they're actually over at CastBox FM. They were like doing some type of link through, but those shows are still active on CastBox. So everything back, going back a year, two, 3 years, whatever it is still there. It's not available on my Kiwi account because we shut it down because we couldn't upload anymore. So guys, all of this business side of things, we're trying to rearrange everything to make it a little bit easier for you to get to. If you want to catch, again, Inside the Eye Live on an Android device, you can basically go to Inside the Eye Live on your Android device, because we notice about 20-30% of you now use your phone. And what you can do is just go on the site. You'll see where it says get it on Google Play Store. Just touch that, tap it, and that will send you where you can now download the CastBox application, and then do a search on Inside the Eye Live and Inside the Eye Live Primetime, and just subscribe, and you'll get all the latest episodes there, the ones that we do through Zap. So through Zap Hopper and Grism.blogspot. So these will be edited with the commercials and everything else. It's all clean. All the mistakes are taken out. It's the ones that you guys are used to hearing from us over the years. So we're trying to now spread this out a little bit more, make it a little bit easier for everybody, and see if we can expand the market a bit more. So again, you can subscribe again on castbox.fm. But still, support the network. You know, the network made a lot of money and makes a lot of its money by taking the archives and selling the archives. You know, you basically buy a monthly subscription, you get all the archives. Now, we're one of the most popular shows, and we're not really selling a lot of the archives because we have always made our archives available to you, the listener. So we ask that you just support the network in a different way. We're not going to cut off our content. We want our content widely distributed. This is the main thing. We want it distributed wide and far. Now, other issues. So first, support the network. Obviously, keep the platform up and running. You can always send donations to me, but that's not so much a deal. Now, the ITEL Cat Report, which is proudly sponsored by friends of grism.blogspot.com. Again, remember to buy Zap a cup of coffee if you're over at grism.blogspot.com. He does all the work for us. He archives everything. He has my passwords. He does all the work. He's out shoveling snow right now. He's up in Canada. He's shoveling snow. He said, Fetch, I got to go. It's freezing cold here. And I'm like, stupid, right? I say, hey, he says, I got to go out and shovel snow. And I like, is it cold there? Or is it cold? I just said, is it cold? It's like, yeah, duh. The ice is cold. Dingling. Yeah, it's cold. Yeah, the snow's cold. But no, he's out there shoveling snow right now. So he's doing what he has to do. That's kind of where he makes his extra money, by doing this type of work. He's a handyman. He's been unemployed from his disc school job for who knows how long now. So he's basically doing what he's got to do. So guys, the ITEL Cat Report, again, sponsored by friends of grizzlin.blogspot.com. Not a whole lot to report. Basically just a bruiser has been going around the house. Oh, by the way, somebody said, thank you so much for your cat report. It's just a little light news. We get so much heavy stuff. It's nice to have a little light stuff after a while. Yeah, the ITEL Cat Report is kind of fun. So anyways, the ITEL Cat Report is nothing to really report. I mean, I haven't called home. I don't know what's going on too much, except for the other day, I heard that Bruiser really has to get fixed. He's making a mess of the house. So we're going to have to actually get him neutered, because he is just making a mess of the house. He climbed up on the counter and actually decided to mark the microwave. Isn't that enjoyable? So the girl that's taking care of the house, she says, I went to make something, and then I put something in the microwave, and I said, oh my gosh, she says, this is what I smelled. So she's had to really work hard to clean the house, because it's been not cold like where you guys are, but poor Bruiser's been sniffling and sneezing for the past month and a half, so we don't let him out too much. He does get let out, of course, to use the bathroom, but he's just marking up the house everywhere. It's just become really, really annoying. So when I get back in the spring, I'm going to have to get the poor guy neutered, because he's just destroying my house. One Eye's okay. Spiker is still around. Spiker and his friend Blackie, they're still outside. They still sleep in their little house we made for them, right there on the porch, the front porch. So they're hanging out. Bruiser has been kicking One Eye out of his perch up there on the top of the refrigerator. So it's been a bit crazy where I'm at. You know, nobody's there to really discipline Bruiser. Because she doesn't know. She doesn't know. The girl taking care of the house doesn't really know how to manage this type of stuff. Me, I would be watching Bruiser like a hawk, and I would be disciplining him everywhere I could. But she doesn't pay that much attention, if you know what I mean. It's not her cat, per se. So she's just not taking care like I would or Emily might. So he's just destroying the poor house. And if you can imagine your cat destroying your house in the middle of winter, that's not a good thing. That's just not a good thing. So we're going to have to go get the poor guy fixed. When I return, that'll be part of the cat report for sure, because this doctor's going to look at this poor cat and think, what are you keeping this cat for? Because in Jordan, they have no empathy. They don't have sympathy. They don't understand. Here's a really good guy, a really good cat, but he's just blind, you know? And in Jordan, they would have no, they would just not care. They would just do something to throw the cat away. So that ain't a cool thing. So anyways, we're going to have to do what we got to do. So that'll come up sometime in May. But that's the ITEL Cat Report. Again, it's probably sponsored by friends of grism.blogspot.com. That's friends of grism.blogspot.com. And it might help if you cue things properly, Fetch. Come on, Fetch. You got to be faster. Actually, I'm pretty fast. It's just I forget to cue things. All right. This is now, it's time for the Oy Vey Moment, sponsored by the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show. Again, it was a new show every day of the week. He's now actually stopped that, everybody. So he's going to go back to 5 days a week. And so this now is okay. But anyways, we're proud to have the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show as part of our team here. And this is, of course, now the Oy Vey Moment.
Oy Vey. Oy Gewalt. It's like another shower.
Oy Vey.
Oy Vey.
Oy Vey, everybody.
How is it run by Jews? They don't like Jews. Very goddamn angry at some of the Jews.
I thrive on boy and tears.
Oy Vey.
Oy Vey, everybody.
The Oy Vey Moment is proudly sponsored by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. author of The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored. The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored features a rapturous 144,000 words that is replete with additional articles never before seen in print. And after having its distribution banned by Amazon and Lulu, The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored is now available from Andy himself at andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com. Get your copy today, won't you? Of course, don't forget to listen to Andy's The Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show, which streams Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock a.m. to 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern on Eurofolk Radio at eurofolkradio.com. To listen, simply visit eurofolkradio.com during showtime and click on the Listen Live link, or visit andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com for Andy's free show archives, which comprises one of the most extensive guest lists in the alternative media. All right, and this week's Oy Vey moment is, where do we want to come from on the Oy Vey moment? We covered the Australian story, so I got to kick that one out. All right, let's talk about this one, written by Ambassador. Oh my goodness, he's an ambassador. Oh, I'm so impressed. Oh my goodness. You know, I got a fun story about Emily. Emily's part of something that works with the Philippine Embassy. It's part of an extension of the Philippine Embassy. And so she's part of, like, not really a secret society, but, you know, she's learned a lot from me how to do things properly. So on her vacation, she went to the island of Mindoro. She's not there anymore, anybody. If you're trying to find her, no, she's not there anymore. But she went to the island of Mindoro. Sorry, Andrew, this isn't quite your spec. I just want to share this before I forget. So what she did, she got a meeting with the governor of the island and the mayor of the largest city. And she actually got a photo op. So she got a picture with the governor, a friendly handshake, a whole great, like a diplomatic style photo op. And that was with the governor and the mayor of the major city. And so she took these pictures home. Of course, they're on her phone, right? Because she's taking like selfies. And she showed her brother, who's a kind of like a, he's not a tycoon there, but he's doing pretty good. And they're like, how did you get that picture? She says, what? He's just an ambassador, or he's just the governor. Why I care? I take the picture with him. And I'm like, yeah, I taught you way too much, man. You're like getting dangerous. You're getting dangerous. So yeah, she's kind of smart. She's learned a lot from the feds. That's for darn sure. All right. This one is coming from the governor of Ambassador Mark Ginsburg. I don't know what he's an ambassador to. Maybe he's an ambassador to the National Federation of Toilet Sellers. I'm not sure. Doesn't say here. Okay, maybe it's the ambassador for the International Toilet Sellers Association, because it's, you know, he's, you know, the Jews, you know, what can we say? But he says here, it's, the big title is the acrid. Oh, you're so cute with your words, you Jews. Oh, I'm so impressed. Acrid. Did you guys have to like spend 16 hours to look that word up or what? But he calls it the acrid stench of neo-Nazi content on YouTube. Dude, has this guy looked at all the crap that you Jews put on the press every other day? Has this ambassador looked at what goes on CNN, what these parade of Jewish people do to us literally every day on the fake news? And this idiot is going to use a title like the acrid stench and basically let us draw attention to the acrid stench of Jewish media programs right now? What a clown. I'm thinking, boy, dude, I would have had to really go into my I don't know what type of mode to go get that term acrid stench. You know, I just don't think in this negative way, but Jews being their minds in the gutter, being a gutter people, I guess it's easy to come up with this stuff. So Mr. Mark Ginsburg, we want to thank you for bringing this attention to us, that acrid stench is an absolutely valid way to describe Jewish media, because you guys smell. Literally, you're even getting kicked off of our airplanes, Mr. Ambassador. Did you know that? We were kicking some of your guys off our airplanes last week because you smell so bad. And then I got reports coming out of New Hampshire last week. They said, Fetch, These Jews come up from New York and they stay inside of our hotels, our little motels up in New Hampshire to vacation. They say the stench when they leave is absolutely disgusting. And not only that, but they just destroy and trash the place. We hate renting to them. Literally, that's what happened. We hate renting to them. So this ambassador, he writes, how many more exorbitantly paid lobbyists is it going to hire to peddle how much better it is? What the heck is that sentence? How much more? That's a stupid sentence, Mr. Ambassador. You ought to get Grammarly or something, dude. That sucks. And then I'm not going to read that. That's a stupid sentence. It's even in your opening paragraph, too. Man, that's a dud, dude. Despite endless mea culpas and infinite pledges to become a better corporate citizen, neo-Nazi anti-Semitic incitement is all too prevalent all over YouTube. Is this guy a clown or what? Does he understand that we just endured a bunch of Jews in front of one of our primary sporting events, basically telling us that they are anti-Western values? Is this guy tone deaf? See where this is starting to go now with all this garbage these people put out? On January 23rd, 2019, that was what, last week, about 8 days ago, the Counter-Extremism Project, wow, that's a big name. It probably means we're just a bunch of Jews telling you what to do project. Okay, let's just put it down into perspective. It said it's spying on Google. Oh my God, you guys are spying on YouTube. It platformed vulgar videos from the neo-Nazi group Atomwaffen Division, which would have remained there but for CEP's vigilant policing. So basically, Jews are admitting they're spying on our social media networks. They're spying on our people that are out there just doing what they want to do. And they're using their authority and almost a police sense to shut down debate, which means that they are proving to us that they are intolerant. And there's no place for intolerance in our society, so we must get rid of Jewish people. Isn't that kind of what Jews are saying? Every time that there's intolerance, you got to get rid of it? Well, they just admitted to us that they're being intolerant. Why didn't they allow this information to stand up? So basically, we have a Jewish spy agency, an NGO called CEP, the Counter-Extremism Project, which translates to a bunch of Jews telling other people what to do. Basically, guys, let's not overcomplicate this, okay? And then it says here, YouTube's hospitality, the name, Chans. And it says Chans remained uncensored on YouTube for 2 months, uploading 15 videos that generated 7,000 views. See, they are you Jews are so pathetic and so disgusting and so in your face nowadays. Do you realize how stupid you look from our point of view that you're out there policing a site for 7,000 views? 7,000 views. And yet you will run garbage on your media. You'll brag about having 1 million viewers plus. You want to take money in advertising for that. Yet you Jewish people out there are literally whining about something with 7,000 views. Does the Jewish community understand just how pathetic and idiotic they're starting to look here, and how racist, anti-Western that they are starting to look, and how they are showing us that they simply cannot be tolerated anymore? That's kind of what they're saying, because they're saying we can't tolerate you. So isn't the inverse always true? If you stand back and rise above the fray and you take on just this kind of godly look at it all and you say, look, I got a bunch of Jewish morons over here and they're doing everything possible to muddy up the thing and they won't allow anything to happen. And I got these people over here, but the Jews have full sway here. Then shouldn't we equally just start to balance out the scale as a higher authority and say, you know what, you Jews have become too much on this planet. You're a big problem. You're like a pariah. You're basically like a virus that has nothing right now. There's no antivirus to you except for things that you keep fighting against, which are what? Healthy, productive nationalism. Family values, respect for your society, working in a together within your community to make things better for everybody. These are problems to Jewish people. If you like your culture, this is a problem to Jews. Why? You know what they say here in the Middle East? Lesh, Yanni. Lesh. Like, why, Yanni? What's the matter with you guys? What is the matter with the Jewish community nowadays? This is really what it's boiling down to. What is the matter with the Jewish community? Now, according to CEP's David Ibsen, it says here, siege is yet another blatant violation of the YouTube terms of service. Oh, so you Jews are policing YouTube for everybody. Is that what you're telling us here? We were all anti-Semites for just saying that you Jews are policing everything. And we were all bigots and racists for saying you Jews are policing everything. Because quite frankly, we don't go around whining like a bunch of losers like the Jewish community does. Maybe that has to change. Just take on the attitude of being a Jew, basically, just to deal with it. Now, it says here, just yesterday, without much effort at all, I uncovered, oh, you're such a big dude, Mr. Ambassador. Dude, you're an ambassador. What are you doing going on YouTube? Oh, my goodness. You're a freaking ambassador, dude. An ambassador, and you're on YouTube. Oh, and it says, I inserted the neo-Nazi-created acronym ZOG. Dude, it's not a neo-Nazi-created acronym. ZOG is so old, it has nothing to do with neo-Nazis. Again, see, Jews aren't smart dudes and dudettes. They're not really smart people. Can you imagine? This idiot, he's an idiot, guys. He claims to be an ambassador of a country, and he calls ZOG a neo-Nazi thing? Dude, what's the matter with these people? Have they really lost their sense of any intellect anymore? Yes, we Jews were so smart. We got 195.632 times 6 million, of course, IQ. You guys are calling ZOG a neo-Nazi term? Dude, it's Zionist occupied government. It's across the West. It's so prevalent, it's not even funny. Everything you turn around, it's a bipartisan law. It's just passed the House and the Senate, and it basically gives Israel everything we ever wanted. Yeah, of course, because it's a Zionist occupied government, right? Then he goes on here. Why is that video on YouTube? The online video game, it says, is a shoot 'em up of Nazi soldiers killing Israeli fighters. Well, nothing wrong with that, man. They have a right to do it. They have a right. Do you realize how many movies we in the West saw of basically Jews and their quote-unquote Goyim army of American military personnel going around shooting Germans? But that's okay, right? And how many times have you seen Jews doing comedy mock routines about Germans with the Heil Hitler salutes dressed up in Nazi regalia? How many times have you seen that? And yet some artist in Thailand, it's one of the big girl bands out of Thailand, she was seen wearing a shirt with a German National Socialist flag on it. And the ambassador got so incensed, they made this girl apologize and go to 6 months of re-education in a Jewish re-education camp, basically. Yet how many times did we watch Jews like in Hogan's Heroes and everything else do the same thing back in our day? See the hypocrisy? We should not be tolerating Jewish hypocrisy. And more people, and they are, thank goodness, quite frankly, they are, quite frankly, speaking up. But we need more and more and more people to continue to speak up until we can destroy this monstrosity. It's the Fetch, everybody, Inside the Eye Live. That's the OAB Moment. Back with more right after. Okay, everybody. Sorry about that. Just kind of killed a lot of time there. Whoops-dee doozy. You know, it's the new setup here. I kind of see what's going on now. Let me see if I can bring him back. I think we can do this way. Okay, Max, are you there? Just still checking, everybody.
Hello.
Okay. Basically now, what I have done is I've reconnected to the studio. And let me just check now. If we're live, we'll try to run. Otherwise, we will just hang it, and I'm going to have to debug this. Okay, they're saying, yay, the audio is back. Okay, yay, the audio is back is a good thing, but you are not popping where you should be popping, so I'm going to have to work with my engineer later, but it's okay. They say you're back. So, guys, you missed it in the chat room. Max Egan is our guest today. Again, he's an artist. He's a musician, and you can find his work at YouTube. I think it's called The Scarecrow or something like that, isn't it, Max? The Crow House, not
the
Scarecrow.
The Crow House. The Crow House, yeah.
The Crow House on YouTube channel. And then he's got the Crow House YouTube archive channel. He's got a huge following over at Facebook, which you can follow him on what, Max Egan in the Crow House, something like that?
Yeah, Max Egan or Max Egan in the Crow House.
Yeah, so guys, and then check out his work. He's got a lot of music. He's got a lot of artwork out there and also famed for. Are you still working at all with the Palestinian cause, or have you dropped that?
Look, I'm trying to raise awareness of it as much as possible, but, I mean, it's a situation that will never be healed is the problem. And really, when you step back and look at it, it's a situation that they keep on going for a purpose to, I think, distract us from what's actually going on in our own countries. I've often said if we don't deal with the situation in Palestine, the way of Palestine will be the way of the world. And if you look at your country around you now, look at all of our countries, you know, what you see in Palestine is a system of surplusing and warehousing human beings. And that's what we're seeing here in our countries as well. We're seeing mass surveillance, everything, all of our rights are being removed in the name of protecting us from terrorism. You know, the governments are carrying out terrorism against us every day. You know, because if you look at terrorism, terrorism is defined as violence or the threat of violence carried out against civilians as a means of coercion, often for political reasons. That's the Oxford English Dictionary definition of terrorism. And that's what legislation does. That's what all of our governments are doing in order to protect us from terrorism. So, you know, it's all the one situation. But you've got to look at Palestine and Israel for what it is. It's a contrived situation that is there to keep us screaming out about it. And it will never, ever be healed until the people of the world, you know, realize who and what they are and stop supporting this system. Now, so much of what we see on the world stage is contrived, Dennis. It really is. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, if you really step back and look at the world, you soon find out that all the governments working together, you know, there are no real enemies. Even when you look at the head of Palestine, like Abbas, the head of the Palestinian Authority, he's got a condo in Dubai. He doesn't even live in Palestine. And he just sits there and puppeteers the stuff with Israel, makes sure the conflict keeps going. Now, Israel needs the conflict to keep going so it can get all the aid that it can, you know. It could take out Gaza in a day if it wanted to, but it doesn't. It keeps them there because it needs to have terrorists on its border so it can get $11 million a day from the United States. So, you know, the whole thing's contrived, and it's a deliberate situation. You know, but while we're screaming out about that, and while we're screaming out about the bombing of Yemen, which is absolutely terrible, and what's happening in Syria, all this stuff, while we're screaming out about all this, we're not noticing what's happening in our own country. That's why they put it in our face, and it never gets healed. So we'll go on these marches, and we'll become social justice warriors and do all this stuff that we do, and we're not noticing what's happening in our own countries at the same time. So, you know, they're all connected, and I do absolutely still speak out about Palestine a lot, but you know, I've tried to heal it for so many years now, and it's just deteriorated. It's just gotten worse. So, you know, it's better to put energy into something that is ultimately going to heal the entire situation, Palestine included. We just need to change our focus, I think, you know.
So where would you recommend you go? Because even me, for three, 4 years ago, I said, look, we have many more problems on our home front than we ever had with the Palestinians. But no matter what we say, we can't do much about it. But what's happening here is a big problem. Do you guys have, at least, or is it being discussed like it is now in Europe, you know, the Kalergi population replacement that we have in our own countries? Is that something making the headlines down in Australia?
Definitely not making the headlines. I mean, I've been talking about it for years. I've been mentioning the Kalergi plan. This is exactly what we're seeing in Europe, what we're seeing here in Australia, what we're seeing all around the world. Yeah, I mean, it's a very, very real thing, this plan to genocide the people of Europe by mass migration. And when you look at it, the people of Europe, and it's European people, it's the white races, genocide the white races by mass migration. But through it all, they're genociding all the races, really. I mean, they're merging it all together. Yeah, you know, they've stolen everybody's history from them is the problem, and nobody really knows where they come from or who they are. Everybody's got this disjointed view of their history. They've got this disjointed view of who to blame for the situation that we're in. You know, the whole world has been played off against each other. All the races have been played off against each other. Everybody, all the religions, everybody's played off against each other. You know, divide and conquer is the motto, and they've done an extremely good job of it. So, you know, I mean, sure, the Kalergi plan is real, and you've got to understand, you know, there's a good motive for doing this as well. I mean, when you look at the fact that the Jewish converts that roamed around Europe for many years, what people would call the Ashkenazis, who some would say also Khazarians, I mean, They got kicked out of 108 countries or something. I mean, they got kicked out of a lot of countries and you know, ushered away because they tried to destroy the culture in all these countries every time they went in there. So they've got a pretty good motivation to want to get back at all these countries and destroy all these countries for what they did to them. You know what I mean? They won't consider what they did to the countries and why they were thrown out, but, you know, they have this revenge motive in all of this. So there's a lot of reason.
It's amazing. Their vindictiveness is amazing. Their ability to hold a grudge through generations is absolutely amazing. Now, the International Holocaust Day was just this week. They like to throw that in our faces. I saw someone made an observation. They went through all the leading statements made by the various Jewish organizations across the globe. And you know what was lacking, Max, in all of this was not one thank you. Here they want to talk about this Holocaust, but not one thank you, because they could never have theoretically bailed themselves out because they were under such suppression or oppression. And yet not a thank you, Max. Not one.
Yeah, that would be all. Well, they consider themselves deserving. And really, if you want to look at the Holocaust, if you want to look at the worst Holocaust in human history, you have to look at Bolshevism, you know, that we can find anyway. There may have been bigger slaughters than that, but the incredible slaughter of around about 66 million Christians at the hands of Bolshevik Jews somehow never makes the headlines. And I think it's very important that it is discussed. And the fact that nobody even knows about this event is a very clear indication of who is running the world today and who's in control of the media, because this is a major event that didn't happen that long ago. You know, it's a couple of centuries ago. So, you know, this is a very, very major event that nobody knows about, and it's a very important event. And when you consider the cruelty of Bolshevism, and you look at how Bolshevism was set up, how the country was set up for that to happen, this is something else that is happening in all of our countries now. We're being set up to fail. You know, our cities are set up to fail. You know, there's 3 days' worth of food in any city. The supermarkets have got 3 days' worth of food in them. All you got to do is pack people into these cities and then remove the food trucks, and the society destroys itself. And this is a lot of what happened during Bolshevism. I mean, people were simply starved to death massively across Europe, across Russia. Really, really bad stuff happened. And we're all being set up worldwide for this to happen again. And you look at who carried out Bolshevism. It's the very people who are in charge of Israel, the very people who are in charge of virtually all our governments today. And the reason nobody talks about this is because they're in charge. The reason, you know, Alexander Solzhenitsyn's book, Together for 200 Years, has never been translated into English.
It just got announced. It just got released like last week in English.
It's taken this long for that book to be translated into English. If people knew, you know, why are they done now? Because it's almost too late for people to turn things back now. You know, with the surveillance grid and all this police state that's rolling out in all of our countries, you know, unless we can get a lot of people to read that book very quickly, you know, how are we ever going to get ourselves out of this situation that we're in? That's a real concern, you know.
And it's not just them. It's Dostoevsky and his work on the Jewish people equally. There's a couple great books because the Russians have firsthand knowledge of working with these people, and none of it has been positive for the Russian people. So people really should listen to the Russian. It's funny how America, as you probably are aware, but, you know, America is just under this onslaught of Russia bad, Russia bad, Russia bad. So everybody that's afraid to inquire is just not looking into really the history of Russia and what happened there. It's kind of maybe a calculated thing to keep people from looking at history.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Of course it is. I mean, there's a very, very rich history in Russia, and there's a lot of research that has survived. There's a lot of remnants of the past that have survived. There's a lot of stuff to indicate what really happened in World War One and World War Two, and what really happened during Bolshevism that exists in Russia. So, of course, that's why they don't want you to look at it. Also, the Russian education system and, you know, Russian professors and things are able to say things a lot more freely than what they can in the West. I mean, if you have Western professors question the mainstream narrative at all, and the media defames them and vilifies them, they end up losing their position or their tenure in whatever university they're teaching in, simply because they're thinking outside the box. So, you know, you can get away with that sort of stuff in Russia. And so, again, it's a very rich place to find, you know, remnants of true history and a lot of very, very valuable research. So, yeah, I mean, of course, that's why they've vilified Russia, and that's why they've kept the divide as much as they can to make sure we don't look there. But, you know, I mean, so much of our mainstream history is wrong. I mean, so much of it. I mean, I've been really looking into this lately. I mean, history is what got me started on this journey. Now, back when I was a kid, I was very interested in how the pyramids were constructed. And I started looking into that and realized that everything's rubbish. I mean, yeah, they can't be missing all this stuff. So obviously it's a cover-up. And you realize that, you know, history just can't be explained by anything that the official narrative gives us. And you've got to start realizing that they've just changed it all, that history, our history is manufactured. You know, most people only know what they read in books, and it's the government control of the education system that came in, you know, a couple of generations ago, which started to cause all this problem. You know, now people just know what they're taught. They don't know much from real life experiences, and anything that doesn't fit the official narrative is just labeled a great mystery or an anomaly or whatever, and just swept under the carpet, and we don't talk about it anymore. But when you think about it, you know, if there's even one artifact around the world that tells a different story to the mainstream version, then the mainstream version is wrong. And there's more than one. There's literally hundreds upon hundreds of artifacts lying all over the earth, which indicate that the mainstream version of history is a complete, not only wrong, but it's a complete fabrication. So, you know, like I said, they've taken everybody's history from them in all regards, everybody. Nobody knows even where they come from. You know,
that might have been, Max, that may have been why that great, you know, as it was part of this agenda, hidden agenda, this great white pioneer spirit, the main thing was to go out and basically usurp history.
Well, yeah. But
they understood it all. Max, going into a break. Now we got everything connected fine. Everybody, Max Egan, the Crow House, back with more right after this. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch. Inside the iLive prime time again on what is really a really chilly and cold day in America. To all of you listening in the United States and America, I mean, my goodness, we feel for you. We do. We feel for you. But as far as us here, it's comfortable. I'm actually in Riyadh, Max. You're over in Brisbane, where I assume it's morning now time. How's the weather today in Brisbane?
Yeah, it's hot. It's hot. It's a little overcast today, which is good. It hasn't rained since before Christmas, so everything's dry. We got 2 feet of water left in the tank, so pretty desperate for some rain. Of course, it's flooding in North Queensland, but very, very dry and drought-like here. We're hoping for some rain next week. Quite warm. It's been extremely hot here, but I've heard about what's going on in the United States. Ridiculously cold, and I really do feel for the United States at the moment.
Yeah, me too, actually. I got a lot of American expats guys here. They're just like, man, thank God I'm not home in Chicago or Michigan. I'm an L.A. guy, so it's always like nice in L.A., but, you know, it's like for the rest of the country, I can't imagine. But anyways, they're listening. They ain't outside, Max. They got to be inside somewhere, so everyone's got to be probably listening to the radio today. So that's a good thing. We got a captive audience, Max. They're not going anywhere. Max, do you deal at all with language constructions anymore in the media? Are you dealing with any of, you know, explaining what the media is doing to people when they use certain terms and the way they weaponize words like anti-Semitism? Have you delved into any of this with any of your audience?
Look, I have in the past, you know, in years past, I've delved into all that sort of stuff. I kind of just assume that most people are aware of it now. You know, most people are aware of how they're being programmed and how their thoughts are being molded by the media. So I haven't, you know, discussed it too much, but I have definitely discussed it in the past.
Mm. Yeah, I know a lot of audience that, you know, thing is, our audience keeps growing. You know what I mean? It was like back 2014, we had a good core of people. But, you know, with the Trump phenomena and the real concern now by not just Americans, but everybody, including in Australia, the numbers are growing, Max. I think it's a good time to be, again, talking about issues. Not everybody's up to speed on everything, if you know what I mean. So sometimes we like to bring up different things because just we are bringing in more and more numbers. But I agree with you, as a general rule, people do get it. They get the media part of it. But it's always an interesting take with the way it's done every day in the media, Max. I mean, it's just nonstop. The story came out from your part of the world where they want to take away the name of the court. I think, what's her name? Mary Court, I think, or something like that, for center court for the Australian Open, for instance, because of this name of intolerance. It's almost like we've allowed the intolerance crowd to use our tolerance to push their intolerance.
Well, and that's just the thing. It's the same as the people that are supporting the removal of gun rights and gun ownership in the United States. They're You know, it's a backwards thinking. They're saying they're against gun violence, but at the same time, they're saying people with guns should go and forcefully remove the guns from peaceful citizens who've never committed a crime and don't want to give up their guns. So people who are supporting, who are anti-gun violence, the same they are, they're actually pro-gun violence. So it's all backwards. It's the same situation, you know.
It's almost like it's frustrating, maddeningly so, because they just do it nonstop, day in, day out, 24/7.
Yeah, and you find that these social justice warriors who say that they're speaking out against intolerance, they're actually intolerant of anyone who doesn't think like them. That's what it is. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. And most of the people are fighting all these issues, and they don't even really know what the issues are about. You know, they're often not issues that are that directly affect them. You'll see white people marching for Black Lives Matter. You'll see men marching for abortion issues. I mean, stuff that they don't – it's not their issue that they're involved in. It's just something that they've been programmed to support without really looking into it. I mean, you know, all people matter, not just, you know, not just something that segregates one race. I mean, it's actually racist thinking doing that. But they'll say, no, it's anti-racist thinking. So everything's backwards. It's all jumbled up. And, you know, as we were talking in a part where we weren't on air because of whatever technical problem that was, which seems to happen to me.
That was my fault, actually. I think I dialed the wrong thing. I was supposed to add you. And I thought when I put a button, it was going to add you. But anyways, go ahead.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad it wasn't the normal sorts of things that I would have to deal with. But, people have had their roots removed from them. They've had their history removed from them. And as Marcus Garvey said, a man with no history is like a tree with no roots. You know, and so people are looking for some form of value in their lives. I mean, even the children had their parents removed from them. Most of the millennials didn't really experience parents the way they were supposed to, because they were put in front of a television and given a video game as soon as they were old enough to know how to work it. You know, most young kids are educated by the television. So, you know, this media was kind of weaponized against the family. Back in the 60s, 50s and 60s, we saw music being weaponized in order to create a generation gap. You know, the Who singing My Generation, I hope I die before I get old, all that sort of stuff, just to separate the kids from their children, to exalt youth, which is over very, very quickly, to make people think that it's all about youth, make women believe that they need to look like they're 18 for their entire life. And once they get a wrinkle, it's all, oh, my God, they're over the hill and their life is lost and all that sort of stuff.
Man, I get the amount of hair color I spend a year annoys the heck out of me.
Yeah, but, people have been brutalized. They really have. And you take this natural bonding away from people, this natural connection they get with their parents. You take their history away from them. You feed them a false history. You teach all the black people that they were slaves and they need to hate the white people for what they did in the past. And nobody really knows what happened in that whole period. And really, when you look at history, you find that a lot of it has actually been fabricated. And that everybody was running slaves, and the history, it's a whole nother show anyway, going into our history. I mean, so much of that is wrong. But what has happened is that people go through their lives now looking for some meaning and some value to themselves, because all of this has been taken away from them by the system, by the fact that they didn't have any true bonding with their parents. They bonded with the television, by the fact that their parents were forced to run on the treadmill, do everything they could, do what they thought they were doing to support and provide for their kids. But really what they should have been providing was love and attention and respect and companionship with their children, and friendship with their children. We didn't develop any of that in this modern society. It was all taken away from us. And all of this need to support the economic system was superimposed over it in its place, whereby, fathers think they're supporting their family by being away from them all day and collecting just enough paper to keep their heads above the rising waters of the economic system, So you take all this away from people, you take their parents away from them, you end up with this Instagram culture where people are out there looking for likes and clicks all the time because they just want someone to notice them. They just want to have value. They just want some attention, the attention that they never got when they were a child, the attention that they never got because they don't even know who they are, because they don't even know what their real history is. We've been brutalized on so many levels, brother.
Yeah, I work in the university systems here in the Middle East, and the amount of kids I see, and it's not everybody, but the amount of kids I see constantly on their phones nowadays just drives me crazy. It's like, dude, put your phone away, man. You don't need to be chatting all day long. Put the dang thing away and think of something besides your phone. It's become annoying watching these kids with their heads stuck in their phones all day.
Well, you know, they want attention and they want to be able to communicate with people, and they think that's the way they can do it. I mean, they don't have to learn any real communication skills to communicate with someone in text on a phone. You know, when you're talking to someone, you actually have to look at them. You actually have to maybe brush your teeth and you know, maybe look a little bit nice and you know, look like you're actually someone who they would want to talk to and actually say something intelligent and actually be able to have a conversation. You know, I was scared of doing that. When you're on your phone, when you're just texting, you can pretend you're anybody you want. You can send them whatever picture you want. You can just remake yourself in that world and step away from all the stuff that you believe is inadequate about yourself, which is all a program anyway, because you've been trained to measure yourself according to certain social parameters and how many likes you get on Instagram. So, you know, it's just a lazy way of communication, and it's a fearful way of communication. It's a way for kids not to really ever have to face themselves or think about themselves. They can do it all in the virtual world, you know, and they're programmed into doing it. So that's what it all really stems from. And, you know, a lot of the time they're taking themselves far too seriously as well, because we tend to take text far too seriously, because, like, you know, 80% of communication is nonverbal. You know, it's body language. It's what you look like. It's how you, the tone of your voice, you know, the look in your eye, all sorts of stuff. You get rid of all of that with text, so people lose their communication skills. You know, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. On a more serious note now, you have made it over to the UK on numerous occasions, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I have. I've been to.
You have. And you made it into Cornwall. You made it into Cornwall.
I did.
You did. And then, can you tell us a little about this huckster by the name? He's a good guy, by the way, in our book, Graham Hart. Did you spend some time with Graham Hart?
I did, at his house. He was a wonderful man. He was very, very kind to me while I was there. He was very accommodating. He had a little, like a little bungalow at the back of his house. He put me in. He picked me up and brought me there. He was very, very, very wonderful man. He was very, very kind to me and very hospitable while I was there.
Can he handle his alcohol, or does he like slur too fast?
Well, I don't know. I didn't see him drinking where I was. I mean, I was out in the bungalow.
Because if I get with him, I'm going to get him drinking, man. I'm going to get him to drink and see if he can slur his mood. You know, I'm not going to let him get away with just hanging out, man. I'm going to try to see if I can get him drunk. But yeah, he told me about that. He said, hey, man, you know, you're out at his house. And I thought, how cool is that? I got to get you back on the air. It's been a while, though.
He was lovely. He was very, very kind to me and very hospitable when I was there. I smoked a bit of weed while I was there. I'm a bit of a weed smoker, folks. If you don't like that, well, that's a bit of a problem, but it's your problem, not mine. But I'm sure he'd probably partake in something like that with you. But I'm not much of a drinker either. I don't drink anymore. I haven't had a drink for years. I used to, but I just kind of lost interest in it. So, yeah, it dulls my mind too much, and I can't function. I can't work, so...
This is my problem. I can't recover quick enough to get back to work in the morning. I remember my older brother saying, I was like, I don't know, he was like 56, like he's my age now. And he says, he's drinking a non-alcoholic beer. And I'm like, what do you do with a non-alcoholic beer? That's wasting your time. He said, Dennis, look, it just takes too long to recover now. This is better for me. And I didn't believe him till I turned 56. And I was like, yeah, okay, now I get what the guy was talking about. Hey, Max, what are you doing now? I mean, are you still, you don't have your radio show anymore, do you? Or are you still doing that?
I do. I do my radio show every week. I'm up to about episode 368 or 69 or 370 or something this week I'll be doing. I've been going for 10 years now, the radio show.
Surviving the Matrix?
Surviving the Matrix on the crowhouse.com. It's on American Voice Radio, like 9 p.m. every Friday.
How do people find it?
Do it as regularly as I can. But I'm going away for a couple of weeks. I'll do this week's radio show and next week's. Then I've got to go away and speak at Anacapulco in Mexico, which is going to be the anarchist convention in Mexico. Then I've got to go out to L.A. for a couple of weeks, and I'm trying to decide what I'm going to do from there, whether I'm going to go down to Peru for a couple of months, or whether I'm just going to come straight home. I don't know. Ian Crane's asked me to come and speak at AV10 as well in the UK, but I just don't know if I'm up to the travel. I'm sort of tossing all that over in my head. So I've done so much travel in the last couple of years. I've been to the UK every year for at least a week or two or a month since 2012.
What's the flight time to the UK?
From here? Oh, it takes you a day. Yeah. It takes all day to get there. I mean, I've got to go to Mexico Tuesday week, And that's going to take, it takes a whole day. It takes like 25 hours for me to get to where my destination in Mexico.
See, this is why I would never go and retire down under.
That's the problem, isn't it? It's a long way from everywhere. You know, it takes a day to get to England. It takes a day to get anywhere. If I go to Peru from here, it takes a day. You know, I mean, I can fly from here to LA. It's 14 hours from here to LA. 12 and a half hours to get back, 14 and a half hours to get there. My trip to LA this time is about that, and then I've got to fly down to Mexico from there. So, but if I go to the UK, I mean, in May, I mean, it means I've got to stay in the United States or Peru or something. There's no point coming back to Australia in March if I've got to go back to the UK in May, you know. So it's just too much flying. So it would mean staying over there and staying away from home for, you know, 3 or 4 months if I actually do the UK theme. It would mean coming home in May after that talk. So it's just debatable whether I'll do it or not. But yeah, I've got a lot on. I've always got a lot on. I've been doing the radio. I try to keep the show on the air even while I'm touring. But when I got back in June, I was on the road for 19 months straight. And with this small little suitcase with like 4 pairs of jeans and 5 shirts. And that was me for 19 months of touring. And that took a lot out of me. But
Yeah. That's kind of how I've set up now, because I'm back and forth between Amman and Jordan, Amman, Jordan and Riyadh, right? So I just set up 2 houses now. I got tired of a suitcase. So I just make 2 houses and I come in and I unpack it and everything's ready and I got a house and I go back to Amman. And of course, that's my base. But yeah, dude, I don't envy you at all that much travel. That's hard work.
It is. People think, oh, you know, you're a jet setter and all this sort of stuff. No, it's extremely hard work, and I'm couch surfing, and it's because when I was away, I spoke at AV8, and I said, look, this is going to be my last tour for a while, and then when everyone heard it was my last tour, they started booking me for all these talks before I go home. So I ended up staying away, and ended up back speaking at AV9 in the same clothes that I was in there a year before, because I hadn't been home yet. It was ridiculous, and. Yeah, and you know, I'm couch surfing and staying at people's places. I mean, people are wonderful. People really look after me while I'm away. I've always got accommodation at a friend's place. You know, someone will contact me. Oh, I'm actually here in LA. I've got a bed for you, you know. So that all works out great. I mean, I don't have to pay for a comm, and there's no cost in it for me. But it's still extremely tiring, and you're in different time zones all the time. You know, it's crazy. It's crazy. And your body clock gets all messed up. And just the air on the aircrafts. I mean, flying should come with a health warning. It really should.
Yeah. What are you mainly talking about now? I mean, what's your main body of work that you're focusing on?
Well, I've been spending a lot of time on history lately. I mean, history is what got me started on this quest back when I was 8 years old. And I've been looking at the discovery of this lost culture of Tartaria, which was a huge civilization that existed right up until recently, probably one of the biggest empires in the history of the world, that has been expunged from all of our history books, expunged from all recent maps, but you can find it on old maps as well. It appears to have taken up most of all of Russia, a lot of Europe, even areas of the Philippines, parts of Australia, possibly even North America. A lot of information regarding that. Also, I mean, of course, the rollout of this surveillance system. I mean, with all the stuff we're doing, all the research we're doing, we've still got this surveillance system, this whole 5G grid, the social crediting system that's going to go along with it, you know, people getting trust scores, all of the massive surveillance system that's rolling out. We've got supermarkets now, Walgreens, and I think 3 or 4 others have all got situations now where you go shopping there and all your groceries are looking at you, and they're mapping your face, and they're judging what you're thinking about, and they're socially profiling you so they can send advertising to your, you know, social media sites and stuff, tracking what you're buying, tracking what you're looking at, socially profiling everybody who walks into the supermarkets now. They've just introduced this. So, and look at the social crediting system in China, all based on trust scores, whereby your purchasing power is limited as to how trustworthy you are. And how trustworthy you are is determined by how well you follow the government rules and regulations, whether you buy the things that they deem are trustworthy for you to buy, whether you buy too much alcohol at the supermarket or not enough diapers for your baby or whatever. You know, they can judge people this way and limit your purchasing power and adjust your social credit points and all that sort of stuff. And people are saying, oh, this is China. It would never happen in the West. Well, they've just introduced it to Apple devices now have a trust score. depending on what the devices are doing. Of course, it wouldn't be the people operating the devices. No, no, no. We're not trying to target them. It's just the device. You know, this is how they do it. So, you know, they're bringing this out in all of our countries while people aren't noticing. And the whole Chinese One Belt, One Road system that is coming online is going to incorporate all of this. And when you look at Trump's actions, I mean, Trump may be doing all sorts of stuff to undermine the deep state and all this stuff that people are giving him credit for. But ultimately, it's just a business plan. It's just a different business plan. You know, sure, it would have been very bad if Clinton was in doing all the stuff that they're doing. And it's great that Trump is not bowing to that system. But ultimately, he's not doing anything to lead humanity to freedom. He's just installing a different business model, which will ultimately lead to the same thing. And with all the wars and stuff, I mean, he's supplying funding to Saudi Arabia and all these countries that are carrying out these massive genocides in Yemen and stuff. But he's also saying, well, I'm pulling the troops home. But at the same time, he's creating conflict on the border with Mexico. He's creating conflict in Venezuela with this coup that he's backing that's happening in Venezuela, which is causing an incredible amount of trouble.
This is insane.
Venezuela.
Yeah,
he's put like 68 sanctions on the country as well. I mean, yeah. Obama had 3 sanctions against Venezuela or something, and 7 or something like that. Now there's 68 sanctions against Venezuela. And, yeah. You know, sanctions against a country, this is basically declaring war on a country. It's an act of war. It's putting a country under siege without really declaring war on them. And the people who suffer under sanctions are mostly children. So, you know, it's pretty disgraceful. So he's kind of bringing the troops home from over there, but he's creating local wars so he can still keep feeding money into that. And he's creating isolationist policies with all of Europe, with the tariffs and stuff he's doing, which is giving them the excuse to pull away from the United States and embrace this Chinese One Belt, One Road system. And he's also giving massive amounts of funding to Israel and pulling every single piece of support he can from the Palestinian state. So you really got to look at what this guy's doing. He's not your friend. He's just a different business model to bring about the same goal at the end.
Yeah, we've thought the same thing you're just saying there. The small issues that we care is basically internally is just the national side of it. We have this huge clergy problem that we have to deal with regardless, you know, because if we don't get demographics lined up, we're screwed, quite frankly, moving forward as a generation. We're screwed. You see what's going on in South Africa, what's going on in Sweden. This is not going to bode well for people of European descent. So. This is one carrot he's holding out to the European people.
The Kalergi plan is very, very real. I mean, the plan to genocide the European people was via mass migration penned by Jews in 1928. And, you know, they've got a good reason to do that because they've got a big grudge against all these countries because all these countries have thrown them out so many times because when they've gone in there, they've tried to undermine the morals of the country. You know, and you look at how the world morals have been undermined. Since these people got control of Hollywood and started pushing agendas against people and controlling people's thoughts with that. The great video I saw the other day on YouTube actually called Selling Divorce to the West. I recommend people go and look at that. It shows the spark in world divorce rates that happened in the 1960s. Before that, we had quite strong family units. And it was all due to movies that were being put out by Hollywood and changing people's way of thinking, which just made divorce attractive to people and, you know, made it so, oh, your children like divorce, you know. Children like to have two different parents so they can get double the Christmas presents and all this sort of stuff. So all the programming that went into that, you know. So, yeah, it's a very, very real problem. And, you know, as I think we were talking in the period where we were off air, the problem of Bolshevism. The problem that people don't know about Bolshevism, the problem that during the years of Bolshevism, 66 million people were exterminated in a variety of some of the most creative ways you could find by Bolshevik Jews. And nobody knows about this. It's been expunged from history, which is a very good indication as to who is in control of the world now. And when you look at how Bolshevism was set up, this is how all of our nations are being set up. We're all being set up to implode the way the Russian system imploded during Bolshevism. But even looking at that, calling it the Russian system, I would suggest that it wasn't. I would suggest it was actually the Tartarian system because, as I said, there is this nation of Tartaria which existed in that area, which has been expunged from history. And it's such a deep rabbit hole to go down. But, you know, a people without history is like a tree with no roots, as Marcus Garvey said. And our history has been removed from us, and this fabricated feudalist history has been superimposed over us to create the justification for the world being in the state that it is. But, you know, really when you step back and look at it, what you see is what we've got is one multinational, multi-generational criminal cabal which has superimposed itself over reality and is masquerading as the international government system. This is just one big crime family, and they all work together to manufacture these wars and to face all these nations off against each other when nobody that you ever meet anywhere actually wants a war. It's all governments, and all the problems that we're facing and all the wars that are in existence and all the human suffering that's in existence is all there because it's legislated to be there by these parasites that have taken control of this world.
Have you been watching, I guess, the one defense that's being put up, which would be the yellow vests in France?
I have been watching that. I mean, they're trying to co-opt it and move it, but it seems to be pretty steadfast. I mean, the French people are very strong in their resolve. Hopefully it will pick up and it will take off around the world and it won't get co-opted and turned into this violent revolution they're trying to portray it as. Because really it's not. I mean, the yellow vests are really just, it's a workers' revolution. And what they're saying in France is, we don't want this system anymore. We don't want this monarchy anymore. We want to change things, and we're not going back to work, and we're not supporting the system anymore. So, you know, all the violence that you see is usually constructed by the police, and it's done for the media. You know, you get a Jean Provocateurs go in there, put yellow vests on and start smashing windows and stuff. And the news service gets it all on camera so they can say, oh, look at these terrible people. We need more police, more laws, more legislation. You know, it's just theater for the masses. But,
they talk about how they, you know, we can't condone violence. Well, okay, then it's time to stop condoning the violence of the police. They're not any different. They're just citizens equally, man. They've just got a uniform on.
If it's time to stop condoning violence, then it's time to stop condoning this system and this government and this police force. Absolutely. I don't know whether we were off air before when I gave you the definition of terrorism, the Oxford English definition of terrorism, which is violence carried out against civilians as a means of coercion, often for political reasons. This is what every piece of legislation put against you, and you're forced to comply with it under threat of violence or threat of being locked in jail. This is terrorism. It's what our whole system is based on, terrorism.
Max, Max, time on Inside the Eye Live goes so fast that we're actually out of time. So the bumper music's playing. Thanks so much for coming on. Let's stay in touch.
Absolutely, brother. Happy to come on and chat to you anytime.
All right. Have a great day. Thanks so much, Max, for the quick note.
My pleasure.
All right. Take care. That's it, everybody. See you next week, Saturday, Inside the Eye Live. Talk to you then. Good day. Good night.